Hello, everyone, and welcome to this very special episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Therapeutics, Technology, and Real-World Perspectives. My name is Diana Isaacs, and I am a clinical pharmacist and a diabetes care and education specialist at the Cleveland Clinic.
And my name is Natalie Bellini. I am a nurse practitioner at R&B Medical Group.
And why we are so excited and why this episode is so special is because we are at the American Diabetes Association Scientific Sessions in New Orleans. And so we are going to have very special guests with us today. And with that, we are going to dive right into our content.
Well, we are so excited to be here today with Jasmine Gonzalvo. Jasmine, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your role?
I'm Jasmine Gonzalvo. And for my job, I'm employed by Purdue University. And at Purdue, I serve as the director of our Center for Health Equity and Innovation. And for my clinical role, I'm in Indianapolis, downtown Indianapolis, where I've worked for 15 years in one of our federally qualified health centers. I've kind of hopped around from different FQHCs, but where I'm at now is in a clinic that serves primarily Hispanic Latinx populations. They're 85% Spanish-speaking at this particular clinic, and there I do cardiovascular risk reduction alongside the primary care physicians, which means basically adjust medications, initiate medications, labs, order labs, for people with diabetes, hypertension, dyslipidemia. We also do some smoking cessation.
Awesome. It's so cool to see another pharmacist really trailblazing. So I know you had a session here. You were a speaker. Congratulations. And it was related to health disparities. So I'd love it if you could tell our audience a little bit about your talk.
Yeah, so I was one of four speakers in this session this morning, and it was so nice to be right alongside Dr. Ann Burns was one of the speakers. They had such great information. My particular contribution to the session was the role of the diabetes care and education specialist in terms of mitigating health disparities and technology for under-resourced populations. And so I really spent the bulk of my time talking about barriers that under-resourced populations faced sort of in the context of the sociological and ecological model. So basically barriers spanning from the individual to the society and policy level. So we talked a little bit about that, particularly in under-resourced communities. So, and I'm sure you can guess what a lot of those are, some of the ideas of implicit bias, and language access, the need for cultural humility were some of the topics that we and barriers that we identified kind of in the context of that model. The second half of my presentation, we of course talked about the disparities, and every single speaker in our session talked about the disparities and how bad it is for Black and brown people, lower socioeconomic communities, and the disparities don't solely exist in those spaces. We know that disparities for communities of color actually exist regardless of socioeconomic status. So we talked about some of those numbers, the data, the literature to support all of those disparities. But then the second half of my presentation was really focusing on the role of the diabetes care and education specialist and really the expectation in the healthcare community of diabetes care and education specialists to champion a lot of these initiatives in terms of using the ICC model, which go ahead and Google it if you don't know what it is, but using that model basically for diabetes care and education specialists to really implement technology from the patient all the way, again, to the systemic level. And within my presentation, I also talked about the different barriers and how they come, they fall into the framework of the ICC model and what diabetes care and education specialists can do. So, for example, one of the things that we talked about as a resource, as an intervention, is using resources at the appropriate numeracy level, health literacy level, to address some of those barriers that might exist, for example, in under-resourced communities. So I did present some opportunities where there were resources that diabetes care and education specialists really should be familiar with to, again, mitigate some of these health disparities in under-resourced communities.
Thanks, that sounds amazing. And hopefully people that didn't catch your talk can go back and watch it on demand.
So I have a couple of questions for you. The first is, as a pharmacist, working in, with cardiovascular health and cardiovascular risk reduction in patients with diabetes, how have the providers that you work with taken you on as a provider in the practice and used you to help, and how do you decide when and where to use GLP-1s and SGLT2 inhibitors and those kinds of classes of medication that really we all know now and live and breathe of, let's reduce their cardiovascular risk?
It's a fantastic question, and we actually published a paper on this specific topic, and what we were looking at was actually the differences in clinical inertia. So essentially, time it takes to advance therapeutic changes or interventions. And we compared usual care, primary care providers to the care from the clinical pharmacists embedded within our FQHC system. And what we found was that there was significantly less clinical inertia in the therapeutic management by clinical pharmacists as compared to usual care. In which case, and that's multifactorial in terms of why clinical pharmacists, we saw more benefit in terms of the clinical inertia avoidance. But that is, I think, one of the huge benefits of pharmacists, diabetes care and education specialists in FQHCs practicing in under-resourced communities, is that I think that we have less constraints and barriers to our time management, time spent with people with diabetes to avoid clinical inertia, for example. So I think that that's one of the best examples of how clinical pharmacists, diabetes care and education specialists are really addressing some of these specific barriers, such as clinical inertia, to really prevent disparities in the FQHC under-resourced community setting.
So do you actually meet with the patient directly and help them learn how to use the medications and side effect profiles and then send them back to their prescriber?
Absolutely.
Can you explain that a little bit?
Sure. So the clinical pharmacists embedded within FQHCs are responsible for a very specific sliver of cardiovascular management. Another paper that we published specific to our health system and the benefit of clinical pharmacist services looked at our intervention recommendations and implementation of SGLT2s and GLP-1s in particular. And what we were looking at were specific racial differences in prescribing patterns between usual care and clinical pharmacists under the cardiovascular risk reduction umbrella. What we found was really surprising. So there were no racial differences. And so we were proud across the board of usual care and clinical pharmacists that regardless of race, we were prescribing sort of at the same rate. Where the huge differential was, and I'm not going to get the specific numbers right, but again, this is published and accepted, and I even forget which journal, but the clinical pharmacists were prescribing the GLP-1s and SGLT2s at statistically significant more frequency than usual care. So I believe usual care was something in the range of 16% with SGLT2s, and GLP-1s and clinical pharmacists were closer to 40 or 50%. And obviously with SGLT2s and GLP-1s being first line treatments, we had a case there to say that we were closely, the clinical pharmacists were closely following evidence-based practice and optimizing care from that lens in terms of therapeutic management and avoidance of disparities. So that we kind of set out thinking that we would see some racial prescribing disparities, but that was good news. Albeit, we did find that we have some opportunities in usual care and primary care to improve prescribing of sort of first-line medications.
I'd love to hear about this because it sounds like you really have, it's supporting, right, the role of the pharmacist, and I'm a pharmacist, so I'm sure I'm biased, but also this team-based care, because I think that is optimal diabetes management. No one person can do it all alone, right? People need a team behind them. So the last question that we want to ask you today is what you are most excited about at ADA scientific sessions, either something you've already seen or done or something that you are looking forward to.
I am so proud of ADA for their focus on health disparities, diversity, equity, inclusion, accessibility. I was on the app, coming here, and I just, put in a search term of disparities and looking at diversity, and I believe it was over 5 pages of presentations that were really focused on disparities and how in the diabetes community and in the diabetes ecosystem, how we can really make a deliberate effort, collective effort, to start moving the needle in the right direction for under-resourced communities. And so I was so excited and heartened about that. And during my talk, I kept on thinking, I know you've heard this probably 50 times over the course of the conference, but how amazing that there's that deliberate lens, because that's what it's going to take to make systemic change and progress in terms of addressing disparities, particularly for the diabetes community. So that's what I was most excited about to be here.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of that with us, and thank you so much for your time, and wishing you the best for the rest of the conference.
Thank you for having me.